Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. Each week we gather around and explore the world of technology from the perspective of blind and partially sighted people. We always love to hear from you, so if you've got a technology comment or question, why not get in touch via email techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week, we'll be delving into the world of video streaming apps. Jackie Brown gets hands-on with the Monarch multi-line braille device, and Natalie Curran tries out the new live view description feature available on iOS. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Natalie Curran. Good to have you all together once again. We've no Callum this week, but hopefully he'll be back very soon. But let's check in with each of you and find out what's happening in your world of technology. Jackie, what you got?
Oh, well, this week I have had lots of work laptop issues. And unfortunately, it's been very sick. It just sort of died. I updated it to Windows 11 and... unfortunately, it didn't. It went well, but then it decided, for whatever reason, it was not going to play ball. So essentially, I've had to, in the last week or so, use my iPhone and my own PC to log into the apps online. That's the web versions of Outlook and Teams. And trust me, it has not been the experience I can say I've honestly enjoyed. So if anybody else uses those web apps, not the actual classic desktop versions, I'm talking about the web apps, it is full of stuff that you have to navigate with JAWS. It is really not easy. And I've been doing that with my phone as well. And as I say, I do not find it the most enjoyable experience. I'm a Windows PC through and through person, and I love my desktop apps. But because my work laptop has been not well, I've had to use the online versions of apps on my own computer because I can't sign in with all the bells and whistles on my own machine for security reasons. So if you understand all that, you're doing well. But I'll just be interested in what anybody feels about using Outlook on the web or Teams on the web instead of using the desktop apps, and obviously the phone as well. Using Outlook on my work phone hasn't been the most pleasurable experience either, because it wants to keep guessing what I'm trying to write. And I've turned off predictive text, but there is an autocorrect feature that I can't seem to turn off. And it just keeps trying to outguess me.
Mm. How do you get on with the Google suite of apps? I appreciate you don't need those for work, but have you dabbled with any of Google's kind of web-based offerings? I've heard from a couple of schools recently that they're moving towards Microsoft from Google. Has that been your feedback? What's your experience been, Jackie?
Yeah, that has been my feedback from the pupils that I work with as part of my own business. It's been really full. The trouble is that education establishments have like a little internet sort of server of their own. So in Northern Ireland, it's C2K at the moment. That's the name. And everything has to go through C2K. And a lot of schools, they're either Microsoft based or they're Google based. And the ones who use Google really struggle to some extent with JAWS, using Google Docs, Google Slides, and so on. So I've played a bit with it, and you have to do things like turning the virtual cursor off and moving around with JAWS. It's not I don't think as plain sailing as using desktop versions of the Microsoft apps.
You think you've got to be a bit of a screen reader ninja?
You have, yeah. Each to their own, but it is. I have had some feedback where, if you're using, Google documents and slides and like the equivalent to Excel. It's not great.
All right. Okay. Well, a bit of a mixed bag there from you, Jackie. Let us know if you've been trying out any of those web-based apps, whether from Microsoft or Google. Let us know what you think about those. Hubert Pavalkovich, you've got a little bit of lurgy, haven't you?
Yes, somehow it's turned up for no reason at all, very suddenly, very strange. But I do also have a quick update for you. Apple seem to be on an update streak with their devices. Their recent one is the new update to the MacBook Air with the now M4 chip, which, according to Apple, makes it twice as fast as the M1 MacBook Air. And what has surprised me a bit about this, no, it's not the quote-unquote ice blue finish that you can now get. It's the fact that the lower starting price is now £999, which is reportedly lower than the previous one was. So that was a bit of a surprise for me.
Yeah, I was in the market for a MacBook Air recently, and I think that's pretty much what we paid as well. So interesting. So yeah, should have the thought, slightly faster processor in a new color. There you go. Change your life, right?
I've got the M1 MacBook Air, and it's a fantastic device. I've downgraded from a MacBook Pro, and I actually don't think I've it doesn't feel like a downgrade at all.
There we are. All right.
So what are the differences between them all then? What's the difference between the MacBook Air and the MacBook Pro,
I think the
for example?
Pro, you get more ports quite often. So there's more
Yes.
connectivity options. Back in the day, I had a MacBook Pro, and I seem to recall it having HDMI and extra USB ports and all that kind of. So they tend to be slightly higher specified and a little bit chunkier, whereas the Air range tends to prioritize thin and light kind of portability as being the design, I think.
So does the MacBook Air look more like an iPad?
No, I think the form, the keyboard layout and everything's the same, it's they're both laptops. The Pros tend to be a bit thicker, tend to have more ports, tend to have slightly higher specification, and they're really designed for professionals, as the title suggests. I think the Air is more intended for perhaps students and home use. And there are, of course, student discounts available if you work in education. I think you can get a little bit of money off some of those products. Let's bring in Natalie Curran. Hi, Natalie. What's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this time?
Hi, I was interested to hear what Jackie was saying about Microsoft's online version of the apps. I've dabbled in them a bit myself. I tend to spend as little time with them as possible and then get back to the desktop app.
Good.
The one thing I would say about Microsoft as opposed to Google is, at least in Microsoft, it can be a bit faffy, but you can usually set things up to kick out to the app. So somebody shares like a document link with you from OneDrive or SharePoint. I've got it all set up so it'll kick out to, if it's Word, it'll kick out to the Word doc, to Microsoft Word
Yeah.
or to Excel, so it won't open online,
Yeah.
which is a trick well worth learning. But personally, I've been dabbling with different voices on my iPhone. So quite a small thing. It's not a new feature particularly. There's always been different voices you could choose from for voiceover, but the range has increased massively. So I had a bit of fun playing around with those. And at the moment, I've got a few of them. So when if you have more than one, it automatically gets added to the voiceover rota. And if you rotate around to voices, you can then flick between them. And what I'm finding really interesting is not just the different accents and voice tones I can get, it's the fact that they'll actually pronounce things differently. So at the moment, I've got Siri 2 Irish accent on, and it doesn't say yards. So I was looking at directions on maps, and it kept saying id. I thought, what on earth is id? And I realised that it's YD. It's pronouncing as id. Whereas with the American accent I had before, it would say yards. But equally, the American accent, when I was on my banking app, would say like £50, which isn't that great to listen to. I mean, you can understand it, but the Irish accent would say £50, which is much easier. So I've been finding that quite interesting, sort of finding out the different nuances between them all.
Yeah, I guess it depends on the developer of the text-to-speech engine, how they handle some of that content. I really don't want my speech to be too clever, because sometimes it does try to overthink what you write. I remember back in the day, SD card used to be announced by some TTS as South Dakota card.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, let us know if you got any if you noticed any amusing text to speech interpretations of your written content. It'd be good to hear about that, or how you're getting on with some of those web based apps, or even a new MacBook Air. Perhaps you can email us techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavarkovich, Natalie Curran, stick around. It's another Tech Talk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk to talk accessibility of TV streaming and availability of audio description topics, which we have talked quite a bit about recently. And today we'll speak to someone who has done a little bit of work on this. Joining me now is accessibility consultant Elliot Stonehill. Elliot, thank you for joining us.
No problem, Hubert.
Let's first of all, can you give us a little bit of a background of your sight condition, please?
Yeah, so I've been registered blind since birth. Got sort of a little bit of sight, not a lot. I went to New College Worcester from the age of 11 to 18. So I was there for 7 years, sort of mid-90s started there. And then, yeah, since then, my main job is working for Northampton Town Football Club in the media. But more recently, I've done some sort of accessibility consultant work.
We are obviously talking accessibility of the TV and streaming platforms, of which there are many these days. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience of the various platforms and kind of the accessibility you've noticed?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say it has sort of come a long way in the last sort of 10 years or so. But I think generally there is still a lot of room for improvement. If you look at, say, the major players, I'd say sort of Samsung, Sony and LG, they all do have their own versions of a sort of voice guidance system on there, which sort of do stuff to a various degree. But a lot of them, I would say, are not necessarily great. You can't maybe change the speed of the voice on a lot of them or change the voice. There's no sort of options to configure stuff that way. More recently, Amazon have brought out their own TVs as opposed to the sort of Fire Sticks or the Fire Cube. And again, they have the sort of voice guidance inbuilt there, which is quite good because you're able to sort of set that up yourself from scratch, whereas some of the other TVs, you might need someone else to sort of set it up initially before you can sort of turn on the accessibility voiceover settings.
Are there any ones in particular that stand out to you as kind of the most accessible that you prefer using?
I would probably say Samsung for me would be my preference. But if you are looking for sort of a lower budget option, I would definitely sort of recommend the Amazon Fire TVs. They tend to be sort of a little bit cheaper. And quite often on Amazon as well, you can sort of split the cost over 5 months interest free, which can make things a little bit more affordable to people. And if you're already used to sort of using voice guidance on, say, a Fire Stick, there are a lot more customizable options on there in terms of at least the sort of the speaking rate and sort of what gets spoken and what doesn't.
Yeah, I've certainly used the Samsung one myself, and I find it really accessible in conjunction, for example, with another smart TV kind of box due to the accessibility of inbuilt apps, which is what I want to move on to next. So quite often the issue we've noticed is there's a lot of comments on accessibility where you've got the general speech on Samsung, LG TVs and that sort of thing, but then the built-in apps to the smart TV itself, so services such as Netflix or the iPlayers, accessibility of them does tend to vary on each of these platforms, unless you use something like a Fire Stick or something like an Apple TV. What's your experience been when it comes to third-party apps on smart TVs?
Well, I think you're dead right there, Hubert. This is the sort of major problem, really. When you buy a TV like a Samsung, a Sony or an LG, you don't really know until you sort of get it home and set it up yourself what apps are going to work, with the voice guidance and what apps aren't. It's really hard to sort of find that information out, even if you sort of contact the manufacturer directly. And even if they've got an accessibility department, they might not necessarily know. So whether, I don't know, BBC iPlayer or ITVX are going to work. I tend to find in the general rule that Netflix, Disney Plus and Prime Video are most likely to work out of all the apps. Whereas BBC iPlayer and ITV can be a little bit more hit and miss. I know currently BBC iPlayer on my Samsung works and so does ITV, but on my previous sort of Sony, neither of those worked particularly well. I mean, to be honest, I have to say, like you mentioned there, sort of using a Fire Stick or an Apple TV, for me, the Apple TV is probably the one to go for. Pretty much all the streaming apps tend to work on there okay. So BBC iPlayer, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, and like the ones we've mentioned, Netflix, Prime Video, Now TV and stuff like that. So really, an Apple TV is probably the way to go if you're going to be using a lot of streaming apps.
When it comes to audio description, which is kind of another segment of this whole work, you know, I mean, in some ways you can say that audio description is available more than it has been, which is great, but I think also there are certainly places where audio description can be available more. What are your thoughts on the current state of audio description availability?
Now, again, I think it is improving, but there's still a lot more to be done, and I think there's certain services, I'd have to call out Sky really, that they currently don't provide any on-demand content with audio description. And they're a long way behind other service providers, in my opinion, in that regard. And sort of Now TV as well are also owned by Sky. Again, none of their content currently has audio description. It was sort of mentioned that it was going to be launched last year, but obviously we're 3 months into this year and sort of still nothing. So I'm hoping it is sort of coming down the line, because they do offer some great content on there. But unfortunately, unless you happen to catch it live, which a lot of us don't these days, you won't be able to watch it with audio description.
Which services do particularly stand out to you in terms of great audio description availability?
I would have to say Netflix. So all their new content has audio description and a lot of sort of back catalogue stuff as well. Disney as well. They have a lot of audio description stuff, as do Prime. And BBC iPlayer as well. I think they've made sort of real strides over the last few years. I'm a bit of a geek and a classic Doctor Who fan. And sort of 18 months ago, when they put all the classic Doctor Who on there, they went through and described the entire series, sort of 1963 to 1989, which I thought was great.
Looking into the future now, what sort of improvements would you like to see in terms of accessibility of, well, smart TV and streaming in 2025?
Well, like we sort of touched on, I think that the sort of inbuilt streaming apps, if they could become accessible, a manufacturer we didn't mention earlier was sort of Sky Glass. Again, they have bought out their own TV similar to Amazon, and they do have an inbuilt voice guidance on there, but none of the apps on the Sky Glass, Netflix, Prime Video, etc., none of those currently work with the voice guidance. And that was something the Sky launched sort of 4 or 5 years ago, but there's not sort of been sort of great improvements since then. It's a difficult one, because it's sort of, who does the responsibility lie with to make these apps accessible? Because obviously Netflix, there's so many different platforms, it's running on so many different TV systems and OSs. Is it down to them to make their app accessible everywhere, or is it up to, say, Sony and LG to make sure that these apps work on their platform?
One quite interesting point you've mentioned is how many services are available. Just, there's so many these days. And my question is, do you think there's almost too many services to choose from these days? Or do you actually like the fact that there is so much choice out there, so many different services to choose from?
Well, it is a difficult one, because I think we can all get a bit of subscription fatigue, can't we, these days? You sort of subscribe to everything. I mean, a lot of them are sort of monthly rolling contracts, so you can sort of dip in and out. Just sort of circling back there to audio description, I mean, it is great that so much content is available now, a lot more stuff's accessible to us. But I still think there's strides to be made. I mean, for example, sometimes when a show or a film moves from one platform to another, It might have had audio description on, say, ITV, but then when it moves to BBC, it doesn't have audio description. So I think it'd be great if maybe the audio description track could be sort of associated with that film or show and moved from platform to platform, if you see what I mean.
Yes, I definitely agree. I've noticed that sometimes with certain shows, and I find it a bit strange that it can't just move along to from platform to platform. Are there any other improvements you'd like to see in audio description, you know, for 2025?
Well, we're seeing a little bit more text-to-speech TTS audio description now, which is going to be interesting to see how that pans out. I've watched a couple of things with TTS, and although it's definitely not as great currently, I would say, as a sort of a human doing it, if it can make more programs available with audio description, on balance, I probably am in favor of it. I mean, I don't want to see people lose their jobs, and I don't want companies to say, oh, we can use a TTS now rather than using a person, because I think using a person to do it is definitely a lot more preferable. But if more content can be made available with a TTS audio description, then I am in favor of that.
Absolutely. I think it's one of these things where it's nice to see that availability. Even if it's not, like you say, exactly in the way we want it, it's better to have it there than not have that option at all. And I've heard some of them, and some of them can be quite decent. I've seen audio-described sports and movies and TV shows with text-to-speech audio description, and some of it is more synthetic than others, but it does work. Can you give us a little bit of background of what sort of work you've done in terms of working with other companies on accessibility of TV streaming and audio description?
Yeah, I did quite a lot of work with ITV on their ITVX app, sort of across platforms on the sort of ITV and Apple TV. And improvements have been made. And frustratingly, as these things tend to happen, they take a lot longer than we would like. And then I've done bits with sort of RNIB and Sky as well. Just another thing, just circling back again there to the audio description you were saying about doing it for sort of live sport and live events. Quite recently, EastEnders did a live episode, and it was really good to see again the BBC there did live audio description for that. So I thought that was a really good thing for them to do as well.
Would you like to see more availability of audio description on live events, because a lot of it is popping out for sports? You know, we currently got audio description going on for the Six Nations across ITV and things like that. So, you know, what are your thoughts on live audio description for events like sports?
I definitely like that. I mean, when BBC, when they have football sometimes, they do an option where you can have the sort of radio commentary synced up with the pictures. And I always go to that. I mean, sometimes when I'm watching TV, if I'm watching cricket or something, I'll have the radio on. I'll try and line it up so they're both sort of going at the same time, so I can sort of listen to the radio commentary whilst watching the pictures. So I think, yeah, anything for audio description, live or otherwise, is great. I mean, we are a little bit spoiled, I say, compared to, say, 20 years ago. I mean, now, if I start watching a TV program or a film that hasn't got audio description, it will really put me off and I might not end up watching it, which is obviously a bit of a shame. But we're so used to watching stuff with audio description now, it can be quite hard to watch something without it.
I've recently watched a TV show with and without audio description, and I think that showed me kind of a true difference of how much audio description is invaluable, because of how much you sort of miss when you watch something without audio description, and then you actually watch it with audio description, then you find out how much you've missed, especially with films that I watched as a child with low vision, and I had no audio description, but then I've watched them with audio description, and I found I didn't know half of these things happened.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on now. I mean, I've had a lot of trouble going to the cinema the last few years with sort of headsets not working and stuff like that. And you end up just watching the film there. And then a few months later, you watch it at home and you've bought it sort of knowing that audio description is definitely going to work. And like you say, you realise sort of how much you've missed out on there. And again, I think cinemas is another area where audio description could really be improved. I mean, quite often, say you go, the headsets are not working. The staff are not often sort of trained. If you start talking to them about audio description, they don't really understand what you're talking about. They'll perhaps put the headphones on and the track will they'll be playing the film, which is obviously sort of more for sort of deaf people, whereas the audio description's a different channel, and they'll say, oh no, it's working fine, and then you're trying to explain to them what an audio description track is, and they don't often know. So that's another area I think where it could be improved. I mean, for me personally, I've sort of given up to going to the cinema, and now I'll sort of wait till the film's coming out and I can rent it, and I'll know, sit at home, and audio description is definitely going to work.
Absolutely. So there are some thoughts on TV accessibility and audio description. What do you think, though? What is your experience been like with smart TVs, streaming apps, and audio description? We would love to hear from you, as this is an ever-expanding industry and a topic that certainly has grabbed a lot of attention, though. Thank you very much, accessibility consultant Elliot Stonehill, for sharing some of your views here on RNIB Tech Talk.
The RNIB Tech Fair Northern Ireland took place in Lisbon on the 26th of February. That's where Jackie Brown got the chance to get hands-on with the Monarch Braille device for the first time.
I'm at the Humanware table, and I'm standing with Lucy, and this product is called the Monarch. It's a multi-line Braille display, graphics display, you name it, and it does it. So at the moment, we've got Braille coming up here. Hello, Lagan Valley. I am the new Monarch multi-line Braille display, it says, from Humanware. So I can display up to 210 lines of Braille, as well as pictures and text-labeled diagrams. Please have a wee shot of typing on my keyboard below. I just love this. I've heard so much about it, but obviously this is the first time I've seen it. So the Monarch is primarily, to be fair, for people in education, because it just offers so much in the way of diagrams, pictures, and Braille as well. And it has a really good library of information already. It's being developed in conjunction with APH in America and Humanware as well. So it's just a multi-line, you know, I say just, but it is a multi-line display. So if you want to read a book, you have multi-lines of Braille, you know, multiple Braille lines to read it on. And if you want to, you know, have pictures, diagrams and all that sort of thing, you can do it with this as well. Most of the other Braille displays are one line only, so you just get one line of Braille, but this has multi-lines of Braille, and eventually the screen readers will catch up with that, so that they're able to cope with using multi-lines of Braille. But at the moment, some of the displays are just one line, and the screen readers, JAWS and NVDA, they only read in one line at a time. So that is all coming. So this device is very future-proof in that sense. It's really, really brilliant for people in education, for staff and pupils. I mean, yes, it's expensive, we know that, but, you know, it's great. I mean, I just love anything Braille anyway. I mean, most things I'm very enthusiastic about Braille anyway. I love the idea of being able to feel diagrams and pictures. And I actually like the touch of the Braille. It's not too sharp. Some Braille devices that are multi-line are really quite what I would call signage Braille. But this is really, you know, this is very nice. You could read at length. I think my fingers would get sore on some of the sharper displays, but this is very nice to read. It's what I would call comfortable. It is. It's very nice, and it has Braille keys to input Braille as well. So it's not just an output for graphs or whatever. It's got a fantastic, which I love, the actual multi-line Braille, because the lines are in proper, you know, they're. There's not a big gap between each line, like I've seen some that have, and the gap is quite big. Not that I mind, but I do love the Braille on this. So I'm using a joypad on the right-hand side. It's like a cross shape that you move, and so that I can move up to the top of the picture, get further up, and then move it further down when I've examined the top of it. So this is... you know, this is really, really, it's amazing, to be honest, because you're getting a representation and you can adjust it. So it's not just one thing on the screen and that's it. You can examine it in more detail. And then obviously, you, if you want, you have the Braille keyboard and you could probably write, and well, you can write on this machine so that you have Braille, but you could probably, you know, give labels to these pictures, I would imagine. So I'm feeling it's a really good representation of whatever it is you're feeling. I would love using it with, you know, pictures of things, things that I've never seen before, to get a representation of what they look like, which I think, you know, that is kind of the idea for most people that have never seen pictures of buildings. Or I think there's all sorts of categories. There is a library that goes with this, and they're adding to the library all the time of different events, different places, different pictures. So it gives you, it opens up a world to a blind person that's never seen things like that before. So that for me is really exciting. And, you know, the Braille, you know, being able to read Braille, a book on it as well with multi-line Braille, I think is absolutely fantastic.
Jackie Brown there with a demonstration of the Monarch multi-line tactile device from Humanware and the American printing house. I think, Jackie, you've described this as almost like, you know, driving a high-end car, sort of almost a Rolls-Royce of tactile displays. There's a lot of software on there. You've been in contact with Humanware about where that's headed.
Yes, one of the things I thought would be really useful to have on the Monarch would be an email client so that people could you know, send attachments, receive attachments to read on the Monarch. So I kind of got the impression from the documentation that there was going to be or is an email client, and I've had it confirmed from Humanware that is actually in beta at the moment. There is going to be, it's going to be called Webmail, which is in keeping with the key soft suite. So it's going to be called, sorry, Keymail, it's going to be called. So that is, yeah, that is the roadmap. It is being tested at the moment. And I think that would be a really good addition, because that means that not only can you read your emails on it, but it would also help that you could send and receive attachments, which I think is crucial for a device like this, so that you can have, you know, books and PDF files and all that sort of thing on it.
I've got to ask you about three things that I know are often discussion points when it comes to the experience of the Monarch for the first time. Let's talk about the size. It's kind of like a gaming laptop, I guess, in terms of size. It's quite a large device, isn't it? How do you feel about that in terms of its portability?
Yeah, I actually liked it, because what if you compare it, say, with the Canute 360, is that is mains powered only. So that is, you know, that does make it a little bit more difficult to move around. But the Monarch has a very good battery life in it, and I think having that on my lap, I would be more than content with it. I do agree, it is, but it would have to be, if you're going to have, you know, a space for 10 lines of Braille and you know, the ability to read graphs or tactile diagrams, it would have to have a reasonable size. But I do think it's very tidy though.
And how do you feel about the membrane? The dots are covered by this sort of thin membrane to protect it from dust and dirt encroaching on the device. What was your experience with that like?
I loved it. I didn't know if I would, but I did. I sort of spoke in the piece a little bit about signage Braille, where it can be quite sharp for some people, like the Orbitz and the Canute. That all uses kind of signage Braille, as I would call it. And I did really love the feel of the Monarch. I believe you get five membranes that come with it. And there's a tool that you use to replace them. But I actually quite liked it. I thought it might be a problem for me, but it isn't. I found it a really very, very comfortable, smooth experience in reading.
And finally, this business of having to remove your fingers when it refreshes, was that a showstopper for you?
No, it wasn't. I wasn't really aware of that by the time I was exploring what I wanted to do and went back. I found that, you know, that it was very quiet. Again, if you listen to the Orbitz and the Canute, they're both quite noisy when they refresh. But I although I could hear the Monarch, I didn't find it intrusive, and I didn't have any difficulty with the refreshing. I think my only concern would be for the UK market is there going to be enough in terms of tactile diagrams and tactile stuff in the library for UK users, because a lot of it is, of course, very American driven. So it would be nice to see a lot more UK stuff on board. But other than that, I think it's just the way to go. And I'm really looking forward to seeing the day when screen reader vendors get multi-line braille in their device, in their software as well.
Have you had chance to get hands-on with the Monarch? Maybe you've encountered it at a Sight Village event or somewhere else, or perhaps you've tried another multi-line tactile display. Let us know, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Jackie Brown, thanks a lot.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio now. We have just been privileged to see the first two episodes of the brand new Disney show, Daredevil Born Again. And joining me is someone who's watched it also, Lizzie Jordan, MBE. Lizzie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How much did you enjoy the show?
I haven't been to the cinema since I lost my sight, actually, which was about 8 years ago now, so I've never experienced the audio description. And if I'm honest, I've never seen any of the previous film, so it was quite intriguing to understand it all through the audio description, and just a really different experience, really.
How did you find, because you've had experience of watching shows without audio description when you didn't need it, how valuable did you find audio description compared to the times when you didn't have it?
Yeah, I thought the audio description was a great balance, actually, because it was descriptive, but it wasn't constantly contradicting other noises in the film, because it was all quite loud and action-packed, so it was quite complimentary of when things were happening. It told you the right amount of detail, but then it let you listen to the characters conversing with each other in between, which was really helpful.
Did you find it allowed you to follow the action in the same way as sighted viewers, where if there were any surprises or any kind of exciting things, you felt you were at the same level as sighted viewers?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. I never kind of knew what it'd be like to have to experience a film through audio description, and I remember someone telling me it's a bit like reading a book when I was sighted, it leads to more imagination. So it was quite cool when it was like reading out different things that were happening, and you're sort of thinking, oh, I wonder how that would look on the screen, but kind of it paints its own picture in your head for you.
Now, you've said you've never kind of seen the show yourself until now, so what are your thoughts on the character of Daredevil and how it has been developed and its characteristics, especially when it comes to representing sight loss?
Yeah, it was very intriguing. Obviously, it was very descriptive. It would say he was using his white cane and his different movements, and I could kind of understand that myself. So it was great that it was quite inclusive, and yeah, just representing disabilities in films, I think, is a great way forward.
I thought it was particularly interesting when you had the mayor of New York City saying, I came here to get things done, and this is me getting things done, that kind of fighting attitude. So one question for you: if you wanted things to get done, something to get done for blind and partially sighted people, what would you like to see done more in society?
I think I would like people's perceptions of blind people to change. There's this stigma attached that somebody who's blind is less capable, isn't on the same level as sighted people with what they can achieve. But I actually think blind people can achieve much more than some sighted people, if I'm honest. So I'd like perceptions to change, really, of that typical stereotype of someone that's blind that needs help, like they I kind of feel that sometimes people think we're vulnerable, and I actually feel the total opposite to that.
What was your favourite part of the two episodes that we were privileged to see?
I actually quite liked the fight at the end. I thought it was just really action-packed and the audio description was really cool.
I think that was the same part for me. It was just so action-packed and kind of gave you the kind of idea that Daredevil is back, you know, he's got that kind of fighting energy. And did you think audio description, because it was quite a fast-paced scene, did you think audio description did it justice and gave you the right level of detail for you to know exactly what's going on?
Yeah, definitely. I remember at one point it was like, and he snapped his arm or something like that, and I thought, that's crazy, yeah, to have on the audio description, but it kind of made sense with all the loud bangs and crashes.
Are you looking forward to watching the rest of the show? And for people that, you know, have never seen Daredevil, what would you say to them to get them to watch it?
I'd say just be open-minded if you want some action-packed content, and also if you're partially sighted with the audio description, it makes it quite thrilling, really, to be carried along through so much happening in such a short time.
Fantastic. Lizzie Jordan, MBE, thank you very much for joining us here at the exclusive Daredevil Born Again screening here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Our very own Hubert Pavalkovich has been getting out and about. He's been to a premiere, no less. And we thought we would check in with you, Hubert, to find out about any technology angles. Tell us about the event you went to and what tech you used.
This was an exclusive screening of the first two episodes of the Daredevil Born Again series, available from the 5th of March on Disney Plus. And we were allowed to listen to audio description, as you would in a cinema, using the headsets. And it was, once the audio description eventually worked, quite fascinating, because with shows like that, I find, which can be quite action-packed, audio description has to be, well, it was very much invaluable, where the detail of it was really good. Because I've tried listening to the show without audio description and I simply missed out on quite a lot. So that was pretty good. And the good thing is, with the headset, we were allowed to make the audio description quite loud, because some of the sounds almost drowned out the audio description, which is a bit of a problem. But thankfully, because we could manage the volumes a bit, it was manageable to be able to enjoy a very good screening.
That's slightly unusual, isn't it? Because sometimes the experience of audio description in those live settings can be a bit of a mixed bag, to be honest. You're saying that you had a sort of receiver mix type setup where you had the audio from the show and the audio description, and you were able to adjust those volumes independently. Is that what you're saying?
Sort of, to an extent. I think the volume of the audio, you could pan the audio description from left to right or the middle, I'd hear a bit of both. I'd say the audio description volume in the headset was much better to adjust. I think the audio from the show, I got more from the actual speakers in the cinema itself. You could sort of manage the audio of the show in the headset, but that was probably more an audio description-based headset.
Mm.
From my experience anyway, at least. That's what it seemed to be once they've actually fixed it eventually.
Yeah, and you had to use their hardware, of course. I know there are some apps now that will deliver audio description on your mobile device. Let's talk about the show itself, because this is part of the Marvel world, not something I'm intimately familiar with, but I understand the character is blind and he himself uses some technology.
Yes, and it was quite interesting because outside of the, you know, very, very much enhanced hearing, much more enhanced than mine certainly is or anyone else's, he could hear sounds from large distances away, even people's heartbeats. That was fascinating enough, but I quite liked that at some point Daredevil himself was using, you know, a talking phone, you know, where it would announce who's calling him. He would use a voice assistant to call people and say, oh, we use these as well. It was quite fascinating because you can. It's a relatable character. I think they've done quite a good job, and you know, the audio description on a regular basis, mentioning, you know, Matt Murdock, Daredevil grabbing, using his cane or grabbing onto people's arms to be guided. It was really well done, I thought.
Yeah, it's nice to be represented in that way and seen. More than nice, actually. Important, vital, because obviously blind characters in popular culture show the world, actually, that we're here and we're involved, even though we don't have those superpowers.
Having never watched Daredevil up until a few days ago, I was not sure what to expect, but I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it also made me want to watch more and see how he's represented, you know, further on in this series, and maybe watch from the very start from the original series as well, as to how that representation started and how it has developed, which is something on my to-do list at some stage.
Excellent. Well, we are keen to hear from you. Have you witnessed any blind characters on screen using technology? How was that depiction? Do you think it was fair and accurate? Your thoughts on an email to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Hubert Pavarkovic, thank you very much. We've had an email from Ian Harrison who writes, "Hello guys, I'm a new listener and an assistive tech junkie. My first point is on the Meta Ray-Bans. I was an early adopter and in my case there has been one major negative but several pluses. The negative is that now I can't launch Be My Eyes from the glasses." Anyone else experience that?
No. To be honest, I paired my glasses okay. I was a fairly early adopter as well. And I paired the glasses in the way that you do. And when eventually Be My Eyes came on, there was an accessibility section in the Meta Ray-Ban app. And I went into that and connected to Be My Eyes. And I've been able to do ever since. Granted, I don't use it all the time, but it is still there when I need to. So with all these things, I'm guessing, Ian, that you have closed down the app in the app switcher and turned off the Meta Ray-Ban and rebooted your phone, and then, you know, introduce them again, to, open the app, make sure your glasses are then turned on. They're all the kind of steps that I would follow first. And if it still doesn't work after that, then I think, oh no, I'm maybe going to have to reset them.
Yeah, because he's saying that the option to toggle Be My Eyes in the MetaView settings under accessibility has also disappeared.
Unless you uninstall the app and re-download it from the App Store. And I know it's a faff, I agree, it's completely a nuisance, but they're all the things that I would go through that little checklist of doing those kind of things before I started to want to throw them out the window.
The other negatives are the flakiness of the software and the Bluetooth connectivity, Ian's saying.
That I'm a bit surprised about. I mean, from my recent experience, I've only set up my glasses a few weeks ago and the connection has been very stable. I mean, what often happens is, they connect quite quickly as soon as I put them on and work fairly well from my kind of experience. So,
me too. Yeah. Mm.
Well, I did also have some trouble with mine last week. So maybe it's just a bug for some of us. Or equally, I did wonder if actually my problem was related to a wider internet issue or something going on, because I had a weird situation where the glasses in my phone were connected because they were talking, but they were saying that they weren't connected. So Ian, I don't know if you're having similar issues, but yeah, I think it might just be general tech flakiness. So hopefully that fixes itself.
Yeah, maybe having a bit of a clear out, perhaps have any other Bluetooth devices that you're not using just now. Sometimes that can help.
Yeah, reset your Bluetooth list. That's another option that you could, you know, just turn off Bluetooth, turn it back on, and maybe delete your devices. I know it's all a pain.
Yeah, and it sounds like Ian might have tried some of this stuff already. But, yeah, if anyone else has any suggestions for Ian, do let us know. Ian does say on the positive side, his eye condition still needs sunglass filters on a rare bright day in Britain. One or two more of those lately, though. It's getting a little bit more spring-like some days. And the Ray-Bans do a great job, according to Ian. And he says that he's told that they do look cool. We want to look good, don't we, as blind people? And he says he finds the sound quality very good as well. So a few positives there. Hopefully you can work through some of those technicals, Ian. And if anyone has suggestions, then do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Thanks for getting in touch.
Hi, so it's Natalie here. And I'm here to talk about the new live recognition feature on iPhone and iPads, in other words, Apple devices. Just so you know, the iPhone that I'm testing this on is the iPhone 13 mini, and I am running iOS 18.3.1 at time of recording. Apple's advice is that you're running the latest software. I believe this feature came in at iOS 18. But like I said, I'm running iOS 18.3.1 on an iPhone 13 mini. So that's coming up for 4 years old. So first, I take a look at the live recognition features as they are. So there's different ways you can access it. Interestingly, you can go through the Magnifier app if you use a Zoom and magnification software on the Apple devices. But I'm doing it through VoiceOver. So the first option I take is a new shortcut introduced where you can triple tap with four fingers. So four fingers, double tap, starts and stops the help. But now four finger triple tap will take you to live recognition. And then what appears on screen is a very short menu that has the options of scene, text and point and speak. And then at the bottom, stop live recognition. So we are going to take each of those in turn. Firstly, I'm going to try the scene feature. Now, when I start this, I'm in my kitchen and I just take it round the room. So I'll let you hear what happens next.
Live recognition started. Detection mode. Scenes off. Button. Text off. Button. Point and speak off. Button. Stop recognition. Button. Detection mode. Scenes off. Button. Scenes on. A kitchen with wooden cabinets and a white stove. A kitchen with wooden cabinets and stainless steel appliances. A kitchen with a sink and a stove. A kitchen counter with a sink, a stove and other items. A kitchen with wooden cabinets and a sink. A kitchen with wooden cabinets and a stainless steel refrigerator. A white room with a blue chair and a white desk. A kitchen with a white refrigerator and a blue chair. A bathroom with a blue chair and a white cabinet. A blue chair sitting in front of a window. A living room with a couch and a television. A living room filled with furniture and a TV. A room with a couch, a table and a plant. A room with a couch, a table and a plant with green leaves on the wall. A close-up of a white refrigerator with a door open. A close-up of a white wall with a spiral staircase.
As you can hear, it correctly identifies the fact I have wooden cabinets in the room, I've got stainless steel appliances. The fridge wasn't quite accurate, and I do only have one, it makes it sound like I have two. And interestingly, it seems to think I have a bathroom in my kitchen, which I don't. I will forgive it, though, that I do have a couple of chairs in a sort of nook that it clearly took to be a living room. So I'll let it pass on that, but there's no TV or anything like that. So it was okay, but not quite fully accurate, shall we say. So the next I'm going to try is the text feature. Now this time I'm going to try getting to it a different way. So if you're familiar with VoiceOver and the VoiceOver Rota, you can add live recognition to the Rota. So that's settings, accessibility, VoiceOver, Rota. There's a whole list of things you can add on there, and one of them is live recognition. And that's how I get to it from this one. And if you do it via the Rota, instead of getting the menu up, you use your finger to swipe up and down to hear the different options. So scene, text, point and speak. And this time we're going to do text, and I double tap to select that. And I'm going to try it over a bit piece of what I suspect to be junk mail.
Live recognition starting mode. Jumble sale and nearly new clothes sale. Friday, the 28th of February, 2025. Saturday, the 1st of March, 2025. 7 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m. Jumble sale entry on the door £2. Adults. Entry includes one complimentary tea or coffee. Collections. We will be pleased to collect any donations of small medium items of Jumble, including bric-a-brac, electrical, book, pictures, DVDs, computer games, toys and clothing on Monday 24, ick, Tuesday 25th or...
As well as the junk mail, I also take a look at the classic couple of tins from the kitchen cupboard, and I'm really testing it here. So the first one I look at is Heinz tomato soup, and what I do is I just keep rotating it round in my hand until it gives me the information I want.
Marto, official colours, or preservatives, multipack, 102 cal, fat, 4.3 grams, 6%, saturates, 0.4 grams, sugars, 9.7 grams, salt, 118%, 1 lg, of an adult's reference inkle, typical values per 100 grams, energy 215 kJ 5 lkc, multipack.
But to take a bit of a break from tradition, I did also take the opportunity to examine a couple of chocolate bars that I was very happy to receive delivery of. So it was able to identify three of those fairly successfully. I think we'll call that a win.
Hazelnut, Malka, Hazelnut, Broken Hazelnut, Nachholte, Cacao. 100%, Alpen, Milch, Milka, Hazelnut, Broken Hazelnut. 100%, Alpen, Milch, Wilka, Oreo. 100%, Alpen, Milch, Malka.
Okay, so lastly, we're going to try this point and speak feature. So again, I'm going to do that by using the forefinger triple tap to bring up that menu, and then we'll select point and speak. So this is an interesting one. Now, the idea here is that you place a camera as normally recommended, about a foot away from what you want to examine. And then you point, you literally take your other hand and you point with your finger to what it is you want it to read. And in this case, again, I go back to the piece of junk mail, which to be fair was an advert for a Tombola, not Tombola, sorry, a Jumble sale. And it just so happens that the section my finger lands on is giving the exact dates of collections and who to contact and when to contact them.
Point and speak off button. Point and speak on.
Collections. We will be pleased to collect any donations of small medium items of Jumble, including bric-a-brac, electrical, book, pictures, DVDs, computer games, toys and clothing on Monday 24th, Tuesday 25th or Wednesday February 26th. Please phone now to arrange an uplift. 0141-637-3122 or 0141-632-8007 or telephone the scout halls on Monday February 24th on 0141-237-1900 between 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. Alternatively, we would be pleased to receive your Jumble at the scout halls from 24th to February 26th between 7 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. We regret...
Interestingly, you can hear that the voice changes. So apologies for that. I'm experimenting with some different voices at the moment. And what's interesting here is it switched from the default voice of British Daniel to one of the other voices and accents that I've got on there. So you'll hear a female speaking very quickly, but all she's talking about is the Jumble sale details. I then try again with this point feature. I try using it against the washing machine. It doesn't seem to work very well, but I'm wondering if that's because my washing machine has symbols rather than words on it. So I turn it on, and when the screen lights up and I point at that, it does identify the word hello. So that seems to be working well there as well. And then just for completeness, I go back to the chocolate bars just to make absolutely sure that they are what I wanted them to be. And they are. So we'll call that a success. And I can stop the recognition by double tapping the point and speak option and then pressing the button in the bottom right corner, or just going straight to the bottom right corner and doing stop live recognition. I should also mention that there's one other way you can get to this menu, which we didn't look at in today's demo, which is by going to Settings, Accessibility, and then right down at the bottom there's the option for the Accessibility shortcut, which is when you triple click the side button or the lock button, and you can set that to be different things. There's now quite a few options on there, and one of them is now live recognition, so you could use that if that works for you as well. Hope you found that interesting and useful, and be really keen to hear your thoughts on it. See how useful you find these features on iPhone.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. Thank you as ever for your company. If you've got a question or comment or suggestion about Tech Talk, we'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Natalie Kern, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.